$5 per year and includes news and interviews on Christian books, video, music, and broadcasting. Subscribe now and receive a free Christian music compact disc with your paid order. To subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. Once again, to subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Call now.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got some real shockers for you today. Make sure you have pen and pencil, as always, and remember my admonition. Listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own right. And I mean prove it. I'll be right back.
Under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and the pledge to the ideals of our forefathers. The men who fought and died in the building of this great nation. It's a pledge to fulfill our duties and obligations as citizens of the United States and to uphold the principles of our Constitution. And last but not least, it's a pledge to maintain the four great freedoms cherished by all Americans. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
How many of you, ladies and gentlemen, have ever heard of Miranda the Toucan? You know what a toucan is? It's a great big bird which has the bill that looks like a banana. That's a toucan. Very colorful, beautiful birds. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Miranda the Toucan is showing up in our schools all across the country. There's a program called Looking at You 2000, which is a health curriculum for children used in several thousand public schools. Miranda is certainly not well-educated in the traditions and history of the United States of America, for Miranda is a socialist subversive. Miranda comes into the classroom, and because she knows that parents cannot be trusted, Miranda encourages children to check the family cupboards for poisons, including alcohol or tobacco. This busybody curriculum, ladies and gentlemen, also urges them to confess problems at home by writing secret messages to the teacher, just like Hitler taught his children in Germany during the 30s and 40s to rat on their parents. This socialist regime here in the United States of America, led by the National Education Association, is doing exactly the same thing. Remember, for the last 5 years, 2 months going into the sixth year now on the hour of the time, I have warned you that this was going to happen and that it was occurring on a small scale. And now it has escalated and its program is in thousands of schools across the United States of America. Using students to re-educate their parents is standard fare now in the schools. And some stupid adults, they're not Americans by any stretch of the imagination, commonly joke about being turned in by their children for such crimes as drinking a glass of wine with dinner or failing to recycle a soda can. Don't believe me? Just read U.S. News and World Report, June 16, 1997, an article by John Leo. This is all true, ladies and gentlemen, and is coming to a school near you. Working on those problems at home, which many schools consider part of their role in their social engineering of the New World Order, is a never-ending task for zealous reformers. In Petaluma, California, ninth graders in a human interaction program were sent home with worksheets that judged whether their families worked on an open or democratic model or in a closed authoritarian model. None of these students could stand up in any kind of scholastic test against any students from most foreign countries, ladies and gentlemen, because they're too busy practicing this nonsense to learn what they're supposed to learn. And it's all part of the dumbing down process, which is destroying this nation. You see, the next generation, ladies and gentlemen, won't even know who George Washington is. The word freedom will have a completely different meaning. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights will be some outdated old document written by doddering old men over 200 and some odd years ago who could never anticipate the problems of the modern age. That's what our children are being taught. Prepare. Democracy, ladies and gentlemen, is coming to the United States of America. Remember, V.I. Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union, said democracy is indispensable to socialism. Mikhail Gorbachev echoed that phrase in his book Perestroika, where he candidly tells communists and socialists around the world that all is not lost, that the dissolution of the Soviet Union was a deception to disarm the West, and that they will once again take charge in the New World Order. In Tucson, Arizona, high school students were asking a health class, quote, "How many of you hate your parents?" end quote. Oregon parents testified that in a values clarification program, their children were asked, quote, "How many of you ever wanted to beat up your parents?" end quote. Discussing or judging parents is routine in heavily therapeutic life skills and human interaction programs. In the sex education handbook, Changing Bodies, Changing Lives, students are encouraged to weigh and judge the voices in their lives, including their parents. As in other textbooks, parents are either problems to contend with or examples of what to avoid. Remember, in the future socialist state, children will be raised by the state and not by the parents. No use for adults. No use for adults told by the schools to construct their own value systems. Students are often led to challenge parental values or to dismiss almost any adult objections as illegitimate. And you wonder why your children won't behave. You wonder why they're rude. You wonder why there are so many juvenile delinquents and why crime is running rampant across this country. You wonder why the teachers cannot maintain discipline in their classrooms. It's no mystery, ladies and gentlemen. Last week, a man in New York saw this in action. When asked what his young child's school was going to do about a wave of bullying, including pushing classmates down a flight of stairs, the head of the school said no action would be taken because children at this stage in their development do not welcome adult intervention. Can you believe this? Direct quote, children at this stage in their development do not welcome adult intervention, end quote. Dana Mack's strong new book, The Assault on Parenthood, How Our Culture Undermines the Family, makes the case that the crises of the public school system is not simply the familiar one of academic failure. It's also that a new ethic dismissive of parents and traditional values has descended upon the schools. I quote, at the heart of parents' frustration, she writes, is a deep and unbridgeable chasm between the vocabulary of moral dictates, rules, and authority that parents think are best for children, and the vocabulary of autonomy and choices that emanates from the classroom, end quote. For generations, ladies and gentlemen, child-rearing experts have been suspicious or negative about the instincts and authority of parents. Mack makes the case that a new culture has extended its control to the public schools, a culture based on relativism, egalitarianism, sexual diversity, a therapeutic view of the world, and hostility to family, authority, and religion. I hope you understand the far-reaching consequences of what I'm telling you. From the article, ladies and gentlemen, in U.S. News and World Report, like a submarine slowly surfacing, this set of attitudes is becoming more visible each day as an official school ideology that nobody has ever voted for. In their cranker moments, many educators admit that their real business is social transformation, socialism, exactly as I've been telling you for years. In her book, Ed School Follies, about the dominant philosophy at schools of education, Rita Kramer quotes the acting dean of the University of Texas Ed School. You can't not use the schools as the agencies of social change. It's too convenient. Can you imagine? Most of us would settle for schools that skip all the social transformation and just concentrate on teaching children how to read and write and do the things that they need to do to succeed and be good citizens in this country. It turns out that the modern touchy-feely, effective curriculum aimed at improving self-esteem or getting children to think about themselves. I've never known a child in my life who wasn't most of the time thinking about themselves. This tends to crowd out actual learning. And that's putting it mildly. But that's what he says in this article. The truth is, it completely replaces actual learning. And that's why many of our high school graduates, and when I say many, I'm talking about a lot, can't even write a simple paragraph. And a great many of them cannot even read. The new ideology is heavily anti-achievement as well, sometimes actively hostile to brighter students because excelling is regarded as elitist, illiberal, and anti-democratic. Better to stay dumb, fit in, and feel good about yourself. See, that's what socialism does, destroys the individual. In the media, parental objections to all this usually come under the heading of condoms, school prayer, and, of course, that old bugaboo, the religious right. But behind the media screen, parents of all political stripes are getting the message, and pressure is building. Building, ladies and gentlemen, to a dangerous level. Alan Wolf, one of our best public intellectuals, reviewed the Dana Mack book in the New Republic and didn't much like it. But he agreed with the central message. In his well-off suburb, he said, friends and neighbors are shopping around for our alternatives to the public schools because of the school's anti-intellectualism and hostility to parents and individualism. If social trends can be proclaimed based on my personal experience, he wrote, suburban public schools are about to face the same precipitous declines in enrollment suffered by urban ones. This is just one indicator that the problem is not a regional, conservative, or religious one. You see, unhappiness with the social transformers in our schools is national, ladies and gentlemen, and it's growing. I would not destroy the minds of my children by putting them in any public school in this country today. Private school, maybe. But I would have to check it out thoroughly. I would have to visit and sit and listen to the lessons. I would have to meet the teachers socially and probe their minds for their true thinking and their true political agenda and their true feelings about socialism versus freedom and natural rights. I homeschool my children. And they are bright and smart. They have tremendous self-esteem and they feel good about themselves. And they can accomplish things that children who attend public school will never accomplish. My daughter, Pooh, was reading when she was 3 years old. Then she took a little hiatus during the year that she was four and pretended that she couldn't read or she forgot how to read. And then at 5, she picked it up just as if nothing had happened. And now you can give her any book off of any library shelf. She's 7 years old, and she can read better than most college graduates. And that is the truth. She's polite, well-mannered, but not coward and not fearful. She is confident, and she will succeed. She understands the principles and foundations upon which this nation was based. She knows about the Constitution and about freedom and about the Bill of Rights. And there's not anybody in this world that will ever destroy that for her. If you have your children in a public school, ladies and gentlemen, you are endangering their mind, their sanity, and their very lives. And you may be condemning them to a life of slavery under a socialist New World totalitarian order. Because the public schools are teaching them that that's what must happen. Don't believe that? How about the June issue in the Phyllis Schlafly report? What's going on in the schoolhouse? President Clinton has been bragging that the current budget deal agreed to by the Republican Congress, headed by Newt Gingrich and Trent Lott, includes the largest increase in federal spending on public schools in 30 years and the largest increase in federal spending on colleges in 50 years. The era of big government is certainly not over. And I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, unless most of you get your heads out of that orifice where you have it firmly inserted and put it back where it belongs. The era of big government is just beginning. Federal spending on education is not merely a waste of taxpayers' money. It does not merely finance a bloated bureaucracy. Federal spending on education is downright dangerous because it means federal control over the minds and futures of American students. One example of this expanded control can be seen in the Employment Training and Literacy Enhancement Act of 1997. Most of you have never heard of this, don't know anything about it. Listen very carefully. See, I've talked before about how people are shoveled into levels by being taught that they're not good enough to ever rise above that. There are some people who are like file clerks all their life. There's nothing wrong with being a file clerk, ladies and gentlemen. When you first start somewhere, nothing wrong with it at all. But I've got to tell you, if that's what you've done all your life, you have been victimized. Your mind has been controlled. You have been destroyed. You have been convinced that that's all you're worth. And that's exactly what this educational system is going to do. Employment Training and Literacy Enhancement Act of 1997, H.R. 1385, passed by the House on April 30th with only 60 representatives voting no. It is a reincarnation of last year's failed bill, which had been largely written by Ted Kennedy's staff. And for that, see the Phyllis Schlafly Report, October 1996, page 3. H.R. 1385, ladies and gentlemen, is part of a curious effort to combine the funding and functions of the Departments of Education and the Department of Labor. It reflects a philosophy that the school's mission is to serve the needs of the workforce instead of to educate children so that they can rise to the pinnacle of their abilities. The plan has been extensively described by Mark Tucker and his National Center on Education and the Economy, whose letterhead, by the way, boasts Hillary Rodham Clinton, Ira Magaziner, and David Rockefeller Jr. Why a Republican Congress would want to give any control of public school curriculum or of federal education funds to Labor Secretaries Robert Reich or Alexis Herman is a mystery. H.R. 1385 would establish local workforce development boards composed of a, quote, majority, end quote, of businessmen plus token representatives of schools, colleges, and community organizations. These unelected boards, controlled by the governor under federal regulations, would be the gatekeepers for the school-to-work system authorized by the 1994 federal law of that name. You see, each local workforce development board would submit to the governor a comprehensive 3-year strategic local plan to identify local industries, job seekers, workers, training delivery systems, and the, quote, roles of individual employment, end quote. The board, you see, would provide a description of the steps the local board will take to work with local educational agencies, in effect public schools, to address local employment, education, and training needs, to identify those whom they believe would be best suited to the jobs that will be available upon graduation, and channel those children into those training curriculums for those particular jobs instead of the traditional education that this nation was once famous for. And it wouldn't matter whether the child wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an elevator operator. If they say he's a mechanic, and that's all there is to it. That's end of subject, period, all over. Spending such sums as necessary. These local workforce development boards are authorized to decide which training programs will qualify as full-service eligible providers and link training services to occupations for which there is a demand in the local workforce development area. The notion that a government board can determine what jobs will be in demand in the future is the dangerous illusion of Robert Reich and others in the Clinton administration who admire countries where economic czars control national industrial policy. And I got to tell you, folks, it's not an illusion of Robert Reich, as Phyllis Schlafly says in her article. It is the way that it has always been done in socialist and communist countries all around this world. H.R. 1385 would finance computer inputting of students' personal data through the labor market information programs. H.R. 1385 would give the Secretary of Labor powers to coordinate and develop, quote, a nationwide system of labor exchange services for the general public, provided as part of the full service employment and training delivery systems of the states, end quote. H.R. 1385 would establish a National Institute for Literacy to coordinate literacy services under an interagency agreement entered into by the Secretary of Education with the Secretary of Labor and the Secretary of Health and Human Services. The federal government is already financing dozens of literacy projects, all of them failures, every single one of them, without exception, total, complete, and utter failures. As Clinton has already admitted, 40% of third graders cannot even read. My daughter could read. Long before most children ever even think about beginning school. While H.R. 1385 is being marketed as job training, it proposes to spend a lot of money to make sustainable changes in a family. Whoa! Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? While H.R. 1385 is being marketed as job training, it proposes to spend a lot of money to make sustainable changes in a family. That sounds more like parent training than job training. Truly social engineering. H.R. 1385 would create a new type of corporate welfare, taxpayer dollars for skills upgrading for those already employed. This probably explains why so many businessmen think, quote, workforce development, end quote, is a neat idea. But there is no indication that the taxpayers are eager to assume employers' costs of training workers for upgraded jobs. But the unions aren't objecting to this cozy relationship with business because H.R. 1385 would also hand out tax dollars to labor unions for research and demonstration projects, whatever that means. Goodies for everyone are designed to buy off all organized groups and destroy any opposition while the feds move us toward a nationally planned economy, a la Nazi Germany under Herr Socialist Hitler. Youths deemed disadvantaged would be given employment opportunities that are directly linked to academic, occupational, and work-based learning opportunities. This would leverage job placement right into the schools under the guidance of the workforce development boards. It's bad enough that H.R. 1385 would reauthorize billions of dollars for job training programs that the General Accounting Office has branded a failure. But it's downright ominous, ladies and gentlemen, the way that this bill centralizes power over education in the federal departments of labor and education. The governors and their appointees thereby bypassing elected school boards and state legislatures. And remember, I told you years ago that all this would happen. Before another dime is appropriated, Congress has an obligation to find out why Title I, formerly known as Chapter 1, the largest federal K-12 education program, has failed. The final report of a five-year, $29 million longitudinal study of 40,000 students shows that this remedial program has not closed the learning gap between low-achieving students and their classmates. The gap actually increased slightly, despite the fact that taxpayers are pouring $7.2 billion per year down the Title I drain. The Department of Education's response to this report is to announce that it will no longer track individual improvement. From 1963 to 1993, federal spending on education increased from about $900,000 to more than $10 billion. While scores on scholastic aptitude tests, SATs, dropped almost 60 points, more federal spending is certainly not the solution to our education problems. In fact, whenever they put more money in, you can guarantee that the learning of the students is going to go down, a la socialism, because the money does not reflect increased education for the students, ladies and gentlemen. It reflects less of the traditional education values in our schools and more social engineering, more touchy-feely programs that make little Johnny feel good about himself. Never mind that Johnny can't do anything else other than feel good about himself. Host in America, and that's why Rush Limbaugh read it on the air, because he didn't want anybody to think that Clinton was talking about him. And you know what? Frankly, my dear Scarlett, I just don't give a damn. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this short pause.
Take us by. God, our King.
Oh, yes. Well, give you a little update for you shortwave listeners around the world from Jeff White at WRMI, 9.955 megahertz, worldwide shortwave radio. He says, to all concerned, just a brief message as I have just returned from Europe and want to update you on the status of our new antenna. While I was gone, the tower was completely erected. What still remains is placing the antenna atop the tower and connecting the rotor, transmission lines, etc. As you might have seen on the news, South Florida has been inundated with floods during the past several days or so. When I arrived, the airport taxiways were even flooded with water, and it has continued to rain almost constantly. Our transmitter site, which is in a swampy area anyway, is quite flooded as I write this. While our engineers are trying to continue working on some things during these rains, it certainly does slow down and often halts altogether the major parts of the operation. Nevertheless, we are still hopeful that we can have the new antenna on the air during this month, the month of June, if the weather begins to cooperate a bit. I will keep you informed of progress. As we move into the final stages of the antenna installation, we may have to take the station off the air for periods of a few hours at a time in order to do certain kinds of work that would be too dangerous or technically impossible to do with the transmitter running. We are trying to do most of this work when the transmitter would normally be off the air, but we are now on 24 hours per day on weekdays and about 18 hours per day on weekends, so it is not always possible. If any of these work periods are expected to affect your program, we will notify you in advance, and of course you would receive a credit for any programs not broadcast. We will try to keep this situation to a minimum. Many thanks for your cooperation and understanding. Sincerely, Jeff White. When the new transmitter is online, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to hear the hour of the time clearly and loudly in many, many, many places where it is difficult to tune at the present time, or even sometimes impossible. So we will keep you abreast of that development. And as soon as we're on the new antenna, you can spread the word far and wide. Waco, the rules of engagement will make you cry, will make you angry, will make you enraged at the criminals within government who are committing murder and getting away with it. Waco, the rules of engagement will be showing at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland, Oregon, June 13th, that's today, through the 15th, which is Sunday. 13th today through the 15th, which is Sunday. That's the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland, Oregon, beginning today and running through Sunday. Cinema Village, 22 East 12th Street, New York, New York. That's between University and 5th Avenue. Showing daily at 2:15 p.m., 4:45 p.m., 7:15 p.m., 9:45 p.m. from today through June the 20th. It'll be showing at the Florida Film Festival at the Enzian Theater. The Enzian Theater, 1300 South Orlando Avenue, Maitland, Florida. And we'll be showing there on June the 18th. That's the Florida Film Festival at the Enzian Theater, 1300 South Orlando Avenue, Maitland, Florida. You can call them, if you wish, at 407-629-1088. The Tower Theater, 876 East 900 South Street, Salt Lake City, Utah. Be showing there on June the 20th. The Key Theater, 1325 and a half Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C. That's the Key Theater, 1325 and a half Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C. Be showing daily from June 20th through the 27th. And if they have a full house every day, then they will extend the showing beyond the 27th. But don't count on it. Go see it when you know it's going to be there. Also, the Coolidge Corner Theater, 290 Harvard Street, Brookline, Massachusetts, near the intersection of Beacon and Harvard Streets, Coolidge Corner Theater. Be showing daily, June 27th through July 4th. In Nevada City, Nevada, which is a small town, and everybody around there should know where the Magic Theater is. If you don't, wave your wand and it will appear magically before you on Main Street. The Magic Theater, Nevada City, California, showing daily, July 4th through the 7th. July 4th through the 7th. And the Naro Cinema, N-A-R-O, the Naro Cinema, 1503 Collie Avenue, Norfolk, Virginia. That's the Naro Cinema, 1503 Collie Avenue, Norfolk, Virginia. It'll be showing daily July 4th through July 7th. The University Village Cinemaster Theaters, 1201 University Avenue, Riverside, California, will be showing in September. We do not have the exact dates at this time. Also, the Denver Film Festival, Denver, Colorado, will be showing from October 23rd through the 30th. The exact dates will be announced, and also the theater and the address when we get it. So there you go. If you're near any one of those theaters, ladies and gentlemen, don't miss Waco, the Rules of Engagement. It will show you what really happened at what we call the Waco Massacre. One lonely person refused to take the crap lying down and scored a great victory. And a judge hit the IRS, that's the Internal Revenue Service, you heard me right, with $250,000 in punitive damage awards. How about that? A federal judge in Denver awarded $250,000 in punitive damages to a woman whose family business was raided by armed Internal Revenue Service agents 4 weeks after the woman insulted an IRS agent. Actually, folks, I don't think she insulted the agent at all. I think what she said was the truth, and the agent should have taken it as a hint to go back to accounting school. The revenue agents padlocked all three Kids Avenue clothing stores in Colorado Springs and posted notices that some customers interpreted as evidence that the woman, Carol Ward, 49, was a drug smuggler. And, of course, it was all a lie. In a harshly worded 17-page opinion, Judge William Downs of the U.S. District Court in Denver found that one of the IRS agents, James Dolan, was grossly negligent and acted with reckless disregard for the law, and that he made three false statements in a sworn declaration. The judge, who said the actions by the IRS agents violated Ms. Ward's privacy rights, wrote that the punitive damage award gives notice to the IRS that reprehensible abuse of authority by one of its employees cannot and will not be tolerated. The judge also awarded Ms. Ward $75,000 in actual damages plus lawyer's fees. Now, both the IRS and the Justice Department, which defended the lawsuit, of course declined comment on the decision. During a 9-day trial, the IRS denied any wrongdoing. They always deny any wrongdoing, while they're doing wrong all over the country all the time. Jackbooted Nazi thugs is what they are. Don Roberts, an IRS spokesman, said that in the past 5 years, about 30 lawsuits a year had been filed claiming wrongful disclosure of confidential information, but that the service had no data on the outcome of these cases. William Waller and Dennis Mark, Ms. Ward's attorneys said that their research found only a handful of awards for IRS privacy violations, most of them for nominal sums. A Missouri man, Elvis Johnson, has been awarded $15.8 million in damages and interest plus attorney's fees in a 1983 case, but it is still in litigation and the award has not been paid as of this date. The Colorado case began in 1993 when Agent Paula Dizernowski audited tax returns filed by Tristan Ward, who was then 20. He listed himself as the owner of Kids Avenue and his mother as a dependent. Mrs. Ward said she accompanied her son to one audit, a rancorous meeting, that ended, according to testimony, with Mrs. Ward telling Ms. Dizernowski, quote, "Honey, from what I can see, your accounting skills, this country would be better served if you were dishing up chicken fried steak on some interstate in West Texas with all the clunky jewelry and big hair," end quote. And I love it. I just love it. But Dizernowski and fellow agents decided, oh, we're above the law. And began to persecute Mrs. Ward. The raid, known as a Jeopardy assessment, was made 4 weeks later after Ms. Dizernowski asserted that the government was in danger of not collecting $324,000 in income taxes. In court papers, the agent said her actions stemmed largely from questions about whether the son really owned the business and concerns over Ms. Ward's travels to Ecuador, where her husband lives. 3 months after the raid, the government settled the tax dispute, covering 6 years, for $3,485. And I have studied cases, ladies and gentlemen, where the IRS has destroyed entire families and businesses for as little as $40. Downs also criticized Gerald Swanson, an IRS district director, and an aide, Patricia Callahan. As guests on a Colorado Springs radio talk show, they said that Ms. Ward still owed $324,000 in taxes, even though they knew that the bill had been settled the week before for little more than 1% of that amount. You see how they try to demonize? These people are the most chronic, bold-faced liars that have ever walked on the face of this earth. Socialism sucks, ladies and gentlemen, and so do socialists. That's why they think this broadcast is so dangerous. They lie so much that in the light, in the cold light of truth, they wither. Like the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz. You don't need to pour water on them. Pour truth on them. Pour truth all over them. And they will melt into a puddle of the gobbly goop scum that they are. Ms. Ward said her daughter Kelly had to quit high school because the IRS statements posted on the stores led students to believe the family was engaged in drug smuggling. She said the family had no debts at the time of the raid, but now owed $75,000. The family lost its lease on one store, she said, but has opened new ones in the Denver area and in New Mexico. She said that only two-thirds of the goods and equipment seized in the raid was returned, much of it badly damaged, and good luck on getting the rest. "I never should have spoken condescendingly," Ms. Ward said Wednesday. "That was wrong, but what they did to me for mouthing off was criminal." I don't think it was wrong if it was the truth. You see, the IRS are so rude and arrogant and unlawful and destructive that just about anything you say to them, in my estimation, in my opinion, I'm not telling you to go out and do it, but I'm telling you in my opinion, it's okay. And I am, after all, entitled to my opinion. You do what you want. This is from the Regional Observer, Washington, New Jersey. Regional Observer, Washington, New Jersey. What's the date on this? Volume 4, number 3, March 97. Sent to me by William. Thank you, William. Study shows that false memories can be created. Seattle. Given a few bogus details and a little prodding, about a quarter of adults can be convinced they remember childhood adventures that never happened. The experiment is one of a series of exercises psychologists have developed that can plant false memories in the brain. Once they take root, these thoughts often become as real as genuine ones, indeed, perhaps even more so. Over time, people may forget things that did happen and remember things that did not, said Henry L. Roediger III of Washington University in St. Louis. Roediger and other psychologists described their memory experiments at a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. They say the work demonstrates the malleability and fallibility of memory, the human willingness to recall things that make sense or should have happened, even if they didn't. All of us, to some extent, are susceptible to these kinds of contamination of memory, said Elizabeth Loftus of the University of Washington in Seattle, who pioneered the field in the 1970s. The researchers say... Where is this continued? The researchers say what? Page 12. Okay. The researchers say that young children, the elderly, and people with short attention spans appear most likely to concoct false memories. But even college students, who presumably spend much of their time remembering what they read and hear, can be easily tricked into swearing that they recall things that never happened. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, I got to break off here because I talked to you about this on a broadcast quite a while ago. And I told you that they had the ability to do this and that that may be one of the sources or the source of this so-called alien abduction scam, and that's what it is. And I also told you, ladies and gentlemen, that all of this is being used for political purposes. I can remember when I never knew a girl who would say in her wildest dreams that she was ever sexually assaulted by her father. Now, I'm sure that throughout history, there have been bad fathers and bad uncles and bad little girls that play hanky-panky when they're not supposed to, or bad fathers and bad uncles who take advantage of innocent little girls who don't know that it's hanky-panky and they're not supposed to. I'm sure that this has happened. But remember, not too long ago, when it was fashionable for every woman in the nation to claim that she had been sexually molested and abused by her father? You know, I never bought that. I never bought it. I didn't believe it. And I think a lot of it was part political correctness, part a lot of women getting attention that they never got before in their life, and I'm sure that part of it was true. But this just demonstrates that these things can happen. Remember the huge wave of children in daycare centers who were claiming, after having been coached by sociologists, social workers, that their parents had molested them, that the preschool or the daycare center teachers had molested them. And then years later, it came out that these children had been coached by the social workers and none of these incidents had happened at all. And that there are good people whose lives were destroyed because of all of this. Can you imagine being a father and watching your daughter interviewed on television talking about how you had molested your daughter when she was a young child, and all the while knowing that it had never happened? I mean, how must you feel when you walk out into the community knowing that other people watched that same broadcast or read the same newspaper article? You see, the odds, ladies and gentlemen, against all of these things happening when they had never happened before are just tremendously against it. And I'll just bet you that this is part of the answer right here. In one experiment, Loftus asked parents to list some incidents in their adult children's past. Then she told the children she wanted to compare their memories with those of the parents. She walked them through a series of real incidents and then threw in a fake one. All she did was throw in a fake one. Just, that's it. Didn't take any more than that. As a young child, they had been lost in a shopping mall and were frightened and cried until an elderly person found them and reunited them with their parents. With just a little gentle coaxing, Loftus said, about 1/4 of study subjects agree this happened to them. Can you imagine that? Some even go on to provide new details. The memory can become so fixed that they refuse to believe it is fake when the experiment is over. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And God bless each and every single one of you. And may God reach down into His infinite well of mercy and save this republic, or at least provide us with a little help. We desperately need it. Put that in your prayers, and I, for one, will be eternally grateful.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, work for all my life, and I had to start again, just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. But the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I'd gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it to be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independent Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, all oldies, most of the time. Classic radio, like you always wished it could be, only on 101.1 FM, Eager.